This is a production of Cornell University.
First, please allow me to acknowledge and thank our donors, Barbara and David Zelaznik, who, through their generosity, have so enriched our lives here at Goldwin Smith Hall. Marianne Marsh, Sarah Rice, and my colleagues in creative writing, whose hard work and vision have made this series and the program here at Cornell such a success. Thank you, Dawn, whose poems I have admired since we first met. So I guess that's 17 years ago now.
Don't say that out loud.
Oh my God. For making time in your schedule to come to Ithaca. And finally, thank you all for saying to yourselves, who cares about that -6-degree wind chill? Poetry is warmth enough. Poetry is worth it. It is. When I think of Dawn Lundy Martin's work, I think of breath, of the mouth, of the container of the body, of the struggle for words to exit and free themselves from the body and the betrayals it engenders. Dawn's readings are wrenching. Hitched each to each, her words lurch and break, yank and pitch across each breath. Listeners find themselves drawn forward in their seats. Her poems have torque. What thing is made without waste or threat? Her work asks. And for access to the body politic, must one relinquish a right to establish boundaries with regards to the body personal? How easily the ways in which we use language to link ourselves to our fellow man break down. How quickly our philosophizing about those linkages disintegrates. How then walk, as Sonia Sanchez in Does Your House Have Lions puts it, toward dare say? How map, as Dawn herself writes in a critical essay, a trajectory toward saying, toward resolution, where the emergent subject will find its language, hybrid or other, and make a way in speech? Here is creative arts practice as critical inquiry, vital lifeblood to work both within and beyond the university. Dawn Lundy Martin's poems don't just encourage rereading, they insist upon it. And they reward the reader with intellectual dilemmas, the figuring of which is the work of being a citizen today. That making a way out of no way, my great-grandmama warned me, was a central task. How to inhabit the sensation of living. Dawn's is a strikingly original and forceful voice on the contemporary literary scene, and her excellent work continues to gain national notice. Her debut collection, A Gathering of Matter, A Matter of Gathering, won the 2006 Cave Canem Poetry Prize. Her next, Discipline, was a finalist for both the Lambda Literary Award and the Los Angeles Times Book Prize. Life in a Box is a Pretty Life is her latest collection, in which we're seized and thrown, as Fred Moten writes, into the festival of detonation we hope we've been waiting for. In that collection, she writes, historically, we extend, we drift into, we are back straight, we bind, we draw, we categorize. We are punitive with regard to fairness only. We are method, we are order. What would you do without us? Oh, we are so very smitten. I am, as ever, so very smitten and very pleased to welcome Dawn Lundy Martin.
I was so captivated by that introduction, I almost forgot that I was reading. It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. I am, I've just been so interested in all the conversations I've been having since I've gotten here about this work and about your work. So thank you. And I have to say, you know, I've been thinking about this visit for a long time. I like a program that invites you, like, you know, like 15 months before you're supposed to read, because then it's like kind of like this anticipation. You're always in this space of desire, which I like. I think I'll start by reading a few poems from Discipline. I'm going to set my timer. The reason that I'm going to do this is partly because, like, I actually think about these two collections as related, even though they're very different books for me. They kind of inhabit the same space of questioning. So I mentioned earlier in one of in one of the classes that I visited, I mentioned that the way that I think about Discipline is this, you know, kind of it asks a certain set of philosophical questions around the possibility for making a choice. Like, what does it mean to make a choice? How does that differ from compulsion? How does that differ from discipline? And discipline, for me, in the Foucauldian sense, like, you know, that kind of discipline is the exact opposite of making a choice, right? So at the same time, there is a narrative thread through the book, which has to do with my father, who at the time was dying from a cancer of the blood. And so there is this kind of like dark sensibility in the work as well. And he, you know, he and I have had a complicated relationship, although it was one of love at the same time. And when he was dying, I kept a journal, and I'm not a journal keeper. And I didn't keep it toward any end. Like, I just kept it as a way of kind of like dealing with the day, really, right? So I don't think there's anything else to say about these pieces before I read them, except that they are mostly prose poems. So they're not lineated. They're mostly prose poems. With the exception of one or two pieces, including this first one, which is called Excreta. The rest are untitled, so when I get to the rest, you will not hear any titles. Excreta, or sentence, or ripe. Here, the held grip over, and flood liquid, a defecated magic. Everything said was surprising, cosmologica in seconds, in breath attempts under weight metal. Here the jar, here the inside of the jar. Excruciation fixed, or phrase, or doubt. They went in, three went in, and three emerged, although significantly reduced. Disposition fragrance like mules or dung. When one is told the structure or the method and the staggering absence of or the omnipresent existence of, it becomes difficult to get on the subway or bathe one's own body. These are acts of resistance, so they appear to be acts. These are acts of forgetting, though they appear to be acts of resistance or love. So, okay, I'm going to take a break to tell you a little personal thing, which is that's a poem that's kind of set separate from the rest. So I realized recently that I'm going age blind, you know, like when you turn 40 and all of a sudden you can't see shit. That's what's happening to me. And so I got these glasses at the drugstore. I can't see you, so I'm not going to look up, but I can see down. Let me try that. So here's where the prose poems begin. Not so much a name, but the result of a name as a metaphor for the eyes inward turning. It might say what the thing is, or it might not know. So then, heritage is fantasy, that the seer looks toward a past, markers of it in food and location, in wrecked bodies, flesh, strung, etc. A want toward warmth, highways of sun through windows, where it might not reach, So when I imagine the father as a boy, he said, in fields a child. In here the hand holds an infant, his, and jumps from a very tall building or threatens to jump in the name of something believed. Bodies in uncommon strobes, what mystery and jaunty bodies, or are they murderous bodies? Who can tell? I can't tell. Streaming video, private locations, large hard hands inserted in zippers. There's unrecognizable scent. There were, are, a we there, a timeless we of all on a wall, we that drift in and out of doors and into musty bathrooms that feel wet all the time. How many ordinances exist? Local communities flailing, screaming into night as fish would into night. What kind of brilliant stare in their scrubbed features, their lips smacking on cream cheeses? I want to laugh, but repulsion invades the body and makes it want to pee. Every silent wailing could find its place in these acts, where the other meets the self. Meat flesh, just order the fucking latte. I am a living example, bootstrap fool hanger on Is there a thing to recover? National dialogues on the blotting screen. Everywhere's down from here, they say, unless. A voice is bare, inaudible. It mouths, my father is half his normal weight and in a bed in Hartford Hospital. Hollows or glass, fragments of being, being or nothing, near not being. Precisely what the body resists, the body is. They turn the television on for comfort. They tuck the sheets and pull them into neat corners, its edges of order. We had a house full of books. Mothers warn against usual dangers, men and the sun. Rough hands of the friends shield against strangers. It becomes difficult to imagine a harmful stranger. You are supposed to write an essay titled Dirty Love, but you can't because you are exhausted by him, the friend, his attic apartment, his slack bathrobe, his rum and cokes and Kent cigarettes. Your skin was lighter when you were 11 and you were more desirable. Fluorescent supermarket lights make the whole thing worse. Reflections comeuppance. Before the effort and desire, one hurries into the porn store and then hurries out again. She's the only one hurrying. Everyone else is motionless. Recovery-ing. One remembers being someone's girl, the possession of someone else. That kind of safety. For what, then? Flap of pages turning. Here is the size of a hole. Here is the size of what happened before and of no one watching. Every day it happens or doesn't happen. The eye struggles to become a part of the reeking body. The body drifts off to fuck like a ghost. In countries with barriers, an attack unwarranted, wrists held tight behind the back. Great views from the wooden window toward whatever. Iowa, strict Jesus, a cock stinking belligerently. In December, lights blanket snowing streets, a dark girl under cover of white. There is no world outside of this. Walls of white and white bliss, flakes sting skin, undeniable and wanted. We could find incidents toward exigencies, moments that should urge, compel. Which evidence, which accumulated evidences would suffice? There are bodies stuffed in trees, we know that. We see them when we do not anticipate them, hungry and echoing into chilled air. We pass cities in the middles of nowheres. We know them by their smokestacks, wires, and infernos burning atop holes in the sky. White families post private and no trespassing signs in their front yards. I want to yell out the window, I am both very alive and very dead. I am a suspect. Why has no one named me as a suspect? There is a disappearance so incrementally slow, no one notices. A left hand touching the right hand, a touching and being touched, a consideration of which. So tell me, it sings, how can I live forever? When a man is trapped, his words are trapped in the defect of the body. When hundreds of untold stories make the body convex, ape out, indulge in excess so that the mouth is never empty. When the grass of youth is so far away, a tale of a tale of a tale, when thinning out drags the skin, when a life so small it is disremembered, scant and numbered, framed by ritual, the steps to the cellar refrigerator, the heaves of breath, and the particular and unordinary love for a daughter more than a reach away, when derelict is as wasting away, when sleeves of abandoned mask the face, when one speaks into drapes and wind, whispers against drift, unheard, when almost everything, every small and huge thing is in one room, one insubstantial place covered by a roof that leaks through a gun hole when thunderous rain, when it is this life and there is the infrequent kiss of the absent daughter and there is a singular desire of not forever maybe, but just one more, minute after minute, when there simply is. So I will stop there with discipline. You know, I should say too, I want to say, although I never say this, but I'll say it here, that there is another haunting narrative that is a kind of unspeakable narrative in this text that is separate from the father narrative and separate, connected really to the kind of confusion between the difficulty in making a choice or a compulsion and discipline. And I think that, you know, that kind of fuels that question, right? The unspoken narrative, the thing that wants to be said but cannot be said, that I will not say, right? So that's also there. Life in a box is a pretty, 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 pretty life. It actually isn't. I mean, maybe it is. I don't know if you like enclosures. You know, that the consideration extends itself, like what happens here is, for me, less optimistic. What is optimism, you know? Is this the right time? Is it really 4:54? Oh, it is. Okay. So it's less optimistic. Although there are moments of bright optimism, kind of like a bird singing. Birds are always in poems, right? Would you even have poetry if it weren't for birds? a high, clear note sometimes, you know, in these poems, just like, you know, something you need in order to be able to live, really. You know, how does one live? How do we all just stay alive, you know, given everything? So I like to start, both of these books, one of the commonalities is that I feel like they should be read from beginning to end. And, you know, people will enter when they enter, but, you know, I like reading them starting at the beginning when I read. So I will read this collection to you from the beginning, and I'll say that there are, again, most of the pieces are untitled. In this case, there are, like, section titles. They're not really even titles, I'm saying that, but they're more like kind of linguistic markers of a shift. except for the very first poem, which I talked about with the class earlier, which does actually have a title. And it comes from my experience with some other poets being in residence at, I was in residence with Yonah Harvey is one of the poets, two other poets whose names I embarrassingly can't remember. And it was 2 years ago. And we got to spend, you know, 4 or 5 days with just alone in the museum the Montclair Museum of Art with the collection, and they asked us for their centennial celebration to, you know, write something in relation to our experience with the art. And so I wrote this piece, which is mostly prose, but not only. And it's called Modern Frame, or a Philosophical Treatise on What Remains Between History and the Living, Breathing Black Human Female, after Carrie Mae Weems's Framed by Modernism, 1996. To feel a presence, they say, can be like a haunting. You are yourself and no other physical being is there, yet a feeling or sensation emerges as if from nowhere, like the negress. The black female body not in repose, instead walking or clickety-clack. It knocks at the door, which is the surface of existence. Or in life, it walks down the street and is asked to assume a position of slackness in response to the perception of being in perpetual heat. What would we do without her? How would we know ourselves? Indeed, we need something against which the pristine can manifest itself, can create its artifice of pristineness. To be unadorned or unclothed, light bursts. Glare from fluorescent mouths breathe their profit into me. No one hears the glass sound of breath, just me. Was, quote, low, they say, quote, fastened in place by violence, was, quote, ritualized, was, quote, debased and, quote, grotesque, was, quote, black flesh or, quote, swathed and, quote, blackness and, quote, finality and, quote, nature, was, quote, sensualized. In standing repose, the object lures us into a belief that she is indeed human. We know this from her sun-draped eyes, her capacity for deceit. We see no absolute proof, however, against the artist's outstretched offering, the Mammy Trophy and the, quote, Al, fantastic Al Jolson performing his signature tune. Enter machines and abstractions. Automations to lengthen legs, round edges, plump buttocks. Relational fish, irrational fissure. All this shimmery ache in one place. Suddenly against your back. My body aflame with it, can't you see? Make an outline around my form. Use your chisel, I will indulge your every little fit, your perfect muse, your blank, blank, your everything, also your nothing. Insofar as the phrase, quote, black woman, replace outside of domestic, quote, power. I lie down in the ditch myself, stretch my body alongside the dead myself. Outside the frame, oblique lover, de Kooning maybe, as a young beauty. His hand reaches in to retrieve me and pets me, my nakedness a fine scratch, filament traces in the historical body. Representation falls away. Chokehold, quote, blackness, swallowed, quote, brown, your, quote, black father, whose, quote, blackness precedes him, stumble and laborious, quote, black gate toward, quote, absence, cross your, quote, black empty hands against your empty, cross your, quote, black hands, empty your, quote, black pockets, hold your, quote, poor, quote, black baby against a, quote, brick, quote, wall as instructed, and the, quote, niggers get, quote, sold up the, quote, river against a, quote, lithe, quote, white fluff. You wail a mimic mouth into beaded rhythms of usness, fragrance of a cosmos where roads are not partitioned, no roads, no marks to mark up the whole big wide world, the holes of the universe is untethered from time. In absence of wholeness, catch glimpses of the sides of cells. If we could be without him, we would. Is there any country without him? We are told of the reservoirs that they are without sea or wind, that we attach laconic swerve and hold what has happened there. Trauma sack. What strikes me, she says, is how easy it is to commit atrocities. Remove from experience rain, unnurture the physical form. A girl is just a girl. One ass cheek on a full chair, balancing. Remove skin, water, sunlight, love. Position the neck so that the landscape dissolves into black wall. Excise language puffs from pharynx, unfurl the scroll. Hear ye, hear ye. We are blank with glee. When dissonance occurs, go to the back of the line. When it ratches itself up, jump into the river. Mammoth voice is our voice, the other side of illness. We're always here. The mother with a jar of hair grease, her provocations to keep you well. In the woods, you'll hear a fire, but there is no fire. Hold on to the photo of the girl in a pale green dress. Require less sustenance. Crush your strings into a single acre. There is one thing that I neglected to say, but should, in that, so in this book, there's this, there's a we. There's more than one we, but there's this particular we that is a kind of like the kind of a voice of authority or a kind of official voice, you know, as if, you know, all of the voices of authority and kind of repression have come together in one voice, I guess. So that happens. I don't know if it's going to happen in the section that I'll read you because I haven't actually decided. So I'm going to read a little bit more and see what happens. Although that was it just now. Oh, Susanna, how the sun sets on this lovely land. Dee-da-dee-da-da-dee-dee. Place where cavernous dee-dee-dee-dee-da. In the square, we drink iced coffees, bam, bam, pow, pow. One more cerveza, otro, everything. Ship workers in from wherever. Let them maintain our harmony, our fortitude. Fold happy hands in grace. It feels so good to be here. A thriving sea, even though it's sick and everyone's kind of sick too, huffing landscapes of junked cars and computer keyboards. I'm wary. My mother is not the person I used to know, and one night I cry into stitched silence, and again later when it's hot under blankets, turn to face water, or I am water, dream of drowning returned. Irina says poems always have birds in them, or dreams always have drowns in them. The dog is so strong in this one, I cannot protect him. Say again, we could not know the limp of decades, and the body waves a giant flag in wind, your face becoming my face. Goodbye again. It's colonial logic, really. There are things here we desire, resources, drip into lapis and full like light is full, all my media meaningless in this light, a strange farce, the weapons, you know, unexpected. Seer says, of, but not from. In here, it always smells of burning wood and rain. My status is ruptured. Sensation of a black boy walking. When you wake, your ass is bare, your door is open. When you shit yourself, parades. How to register the junket in the current condition. Think of the tiny, placid form. Hey, girl. Hey, hey. Come to me wholeness and fresh. A narrow, narrow vial of wilderness, then factor of dissembling. What it does in split. I speak to you from a crack in the surface, from the elongated scar, a silver cylinder. Fortress upon me. The eye in dramatic gesticulation, its facade trembling. When the soldiers come, and they will come, it will be important to note known objects of particular use. Fatback, your yard loins, rivers, my father's black uniform. When later the fold is undone, no memory. Form arrives at the end of language. The body in the basement is bobbled with welts. It cries and cries in a wet corner. We must leave this in the well. Representation just fell away to liberate the past from the past. Whispers, my father's cold lantern, brown and gray dickies. Memory, the absence of thought. Pull all hair from comb. Fold into square of white paper. Set fire over toilet. When we were kids every day, nothing. Knees tugged together. When no light, pale purple dress pulled down to hem, knees to cover. Someone distance, mouth pinch, hum, silent hum. Not a song, but a series of sounds or grunts. Black flies in the backs of throats. In this photo, the yard is safe. The other one is demonstrative in its affections. You inhale wet air, feel lonely as blue shoes are lonely. Grime there to reach into the open mouth and pull out a foreign substance, a bone or a lock. I know nothing about the yard, I say when questioned, bare souls undoing themselves. Some try to tell us that reading is the same as living, but we know this is not the case. The letter is not a breath. Even the body's cells are contrivance or accidents, floating screens, black bodies, unfathomable, violent acts. Only Will Smith has been spared. There is writing, and then there is this cut, this whelm. When I, a lad, swelling and succumbed, no one spoke to me, dripping. They tell me I should lurk, shoulders cast forward, bullish. Shutters pelt into brace, maw. She sent me a mauve dream, and I thought the words cracked open. All the wolves, what we might produce in shadows for fawns. Hello, free house, hello. No, goodbye. So long, buzzards, wide-eyed ghosts. So this penultimate section, I'll just read a few pieces. The linguistic marker before this section is this. Without knowing the slightest thing about war, I find myself an instrument of labor, investigation, and experiment. What are the dimensions of the field? They've put me here in the tallest grasses and strangest fruit and have demanded at gunpoint that I bend into it over and over. But I am so tired and my limbs are sore and I feel disconnected or I disintegrate. A shadow figure towers over me as I exhaust, body buckle, ballast removed. When the dirt is black enough, when my hand is strong enough, I dig into it, open space, and fall through other side to a black sound, a black stone, familiar thieves, Urdu, or the last language we spoke before mother's milk. They circle around me, clasping wrists, and I yell into a hole in the earth, and earth, my palm proffers Oromo, undoing silt, breakaway. This is the body bending over my body. They have encircled me with their manacled tongues, but I do not understand them. My form is small and lean, but they think I am large and bull-eyed. What is yielded here is nothing. No sign of blood, no sign of dripping, no ache, only my small form without space around it. What is the body but a leaking form? No room for leaking. A form so tight around my form it cannot seep or gesture. Complete enclosure. To hold a drop of water is extreme labor, tongue against ground. The difference between experience and dreams falls away. There are locks in every corner like little eyes. Even time no longer passes, each fractured second redundant artifice of time, of location, my father's red eyes. If there is a wandering, I do not know it. The eye lock has its determinant grip. When I open my mouth, someone else speaks words that happen in my dreams as islands. Jaw agape, the work of wheezing each day to the river but dry, weight of crackling. In the hand, a mass of grandfather's thin hair, wind mass. A voice speaks soft into ear, says irretrievable, says the dog too cries, mama. Hair, a spare mass of grief. How to make the self distinct amongst whales, amongst white whales. A dead fawn under the machinery. I am the machinery, am also the end of the sentence. In heat they want me, also to lap at their crotches, saying thank you because their syntax wants definition of this body. All the colors, it is you who are they. From inner valve, an orphic effort, a monument force against your greed feast, your half-lidded gulps. You ruminate, you vomit into the mouths of fawns. You say, I love you. I love you. My form removed from its home, its warmth, its sustenance. They tell me I have enough, that I'm not dying. But I can see my own gray legs ashen. To witness the floor, and then it's me on the floor. Carry the draped body, feet first, already a hole forked, my spirit confused from return. The slaves blink their slow eyes. They pull their tie knots close to collars, dead wings, faces bald, and speak with ease. Boom, the voices go, my head an empty vase. They will tell you that I was sick, that I was a drug addict. They will tell you I died a natural death. Sometimes young people just die, they will say. We don't know why. They will say I was lazy, that I could not work because of disease or just general feebleness. When a crime is committed by a white man, they will show you a picture of me instead and call me a trickster. In the photo, my jaw is slack, my hair wild. They will say that I am unkillable, that my body resists battery by tree trunks, bullets, and small years in small cells. When I enter a store to buy something, I will be immediately arrested, and then they will apologize. I am just a child, I will say. Impossible to be so greasy and a child, they will say. There are no children anymore. Why are you so sad, they will ask me. Why is your heart so weak? We've given you everything, they say. Why won't you flourish? The slaves are dressed as men. They go to work in gray suits. Their bodies are grammar incarnate. So they bracket force when inside gated halls. They contain themselves in bright photographs that refuse speech. They partition the doors to prevent interlopers. Sometimes they use the word savage when the containers leak. Thank you.
Ourselves but through language. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed a lot about how you write is, especially on, I believe it's page 80, you not only create, I mean, in your book, I don't know the title of it because there aren't titles, but you invent a few words in that particular poem, and you show us that you can invent language too, which gives hope for almost a self-invention, and I think that's reinforced by just another line from one of your poems that I happen to have in here that you say, when the seer said, you might be a completely new person in a year. And I think this sense of invention does give rise to hope in the right now too, because you have hope for the coming times. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if you would read that poem, because I would love to hear your language and the way that you use sure. the spaces.
On page 80. You know, yeah, you know, I want to say something in kind of preface to that, too, which is like, you know, one of my favorite poet theorists, her name is Erica Hunt, and she's been like a kind of, you know, she was certainly, when I was younger, a kind of like anchor for my thinking and my poetics. And, you know, one of the things that she said is that, like, ordinary language creates ordinary thought, which I, you know, that's a summary. But, you know, so to get outside of that, oh, I stopped before page 80. I see what you're saying. So I'll read this. I stopped because, like, oh, one of my other favorite people, you know, Myung-Mi Kim says, you know, there's some moments that are untranslatable orally. I will try. Repository. Chemical doorways. Many armies. Fragrance glut, plume, vine torn. Where are my hands and my feet? Where are the lights? In here, I'm right before your eyes. Blue. Red twinkle. That's my best rendition.
Thank you. My question is, who's your most important reader for either of your books or just generally?
It's hard. That's a really hard question. Who's my most important reader? You know, I don't know. You know, there's a, you know, I think that, you mean in process or after the fact of the publication, wherever? Yeah, I don't know, you know. I think that, like, I'm a fan of Nathaniel Mackey's idea, not necessarily that he invented this idea, but that the work creates a kind of audience. I never have an imagined audience necessarily, although with this book, with Life in a Box is a Pretty Life, I've said, you know, reading this, you know, I've only read it a few times so far, but, you know, that I wrote this book for Black people because all my audiences are always, like, really white. And I'm like, I'm going to write a book for Black people. I'm going to invent a Black audience for my work. You know, whatever. I'm trying. But that's kind of a jokey answer. But, you know, I do think that there's a way in which a kind of work kind of creates an audience. I mean, you know, I never think about audience when I'm writing. I think I said this earlier, and I think about a kind of investment in the moment of writing, in the act of creating something is the most important thing for me. So, like, I think the moment that I start to think about audience is the moment that I start to get outside the poem, in a way, right? Like, I'm interested in the process of making and kind of entering that space where, like, you know, part of your brain, a little piece of it lifts up, as opposed to thinking about, like, who's out there, who are the receivers of the thing. But I do hope that, you know, when the work kind of, like, intersects with readers, that, you know, that that's the way that the audience is created. That's a very evasive answer, but that's what I got.
So you talked a bit about how the we was an authoritative voice, and I was wondering if you could talk about the they.
The they. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that that's less, I mean, you know, they're kind of like the same, right? But from a different perspective. Except, like, I think that the we as an authoritative voice is like a kind of like, it's as if you could kind of like take discourse, you know, kind of like all the interweavings of discourse and like make it into like an entity, like a monster, you know? right? And so, like, that's like the we that speaks when it's like, oh, you know, it's like all saying all these things. And so, but the they, I think, you know, is, you know, that they can actually be actual. This is what they say. It could be the media, you know, because, like, this is what they say. They tell us these things. They collude to tell us these things. It may be like a bracketing. It's just from a different perspective. I think less kind of, you know, science fiction-y, less dystopic, maybe not, I don't know. But, you know, less kind of like embodied in this kind of, you know, imagined kind of mass that's created in this moment of the we. I really wanted to have this kind of, this really, like as if authority could be a being. So this is, I guess, you know, there's a different gesture behind them. So that's a gesture behind that. And then, although they might be like the same beings or set of beings or collusion or collision of beings, like the they from this other perspective is like, you know, kind of like, I think that they, in my imagination, or the way that I think about it, is kind of like less that kind of like figure writ large or whatever, but a kind of pointing to what they do when they do it, right? And it could, you could kind of like name it, but you can't really name, I think, the we is clearly. In different situations, you can say, yeah, that's right, that's what they do, you know? They're like, oh, yeah, who committed the crime, you know? They'll say these people committed the crime when they don't actually know, right? You can name that they. So I think that I think there's a subtle difference, and it's a difference not only of perspective, but of kind of, you know, my intention around it that may not actually be legible on the page.
Dawn, always great to hear you read. I actually have a related question about pronouns, and this is from discipline. Mm-hmm. I was really taken in that collection, the way you trouble the lyric eye. Mm-hmm. And a refrain I found is, it's often preceded by the article, that eye, in a way that would make me pause and question what this thing I stands for. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you could say maybe something about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I talked about this a little earlier, in the class that I visited, but you know, I'll say that, like, so there are a lot of different things at work there, and one of the things that's at work is that some of my other work kind of comes out of my earlier work is, you know, really about a relationship to trauma. And so, like, you know, having this kind of, you know, experience of trauma makes me kind of like really intimately connected to this possibility of like the multiple selves. And it makes me really just trust kind of the singular, stable, you know, a singular stable subjectivity. But of course, you know, that is related to like the lyric eye. And the example that I gave earlier has to do with like the, you know, about, you know, physical torture as a kind of like perfect example of like when the eye becomes separate from the other eye, the body, right? And so, you know, if you read torture narratives, there's a way in which there's often this kind of like way in which, you know, there's a part of the self that will separate from the self to look down on the body or at the body, because that's like a means of surviving. And I think that I want to bring that into often this kind of like thinking about what it means to be like a racialized subject, right? You know, like how do you survive? Like what are the ways in which we are not singular, but multiple as a means of survival, right? And so like, I think that comes into this work and in you know, a very direct way. Like I'm really suspect of, you know, this Western notion of like the singular self, because, you know, experience like dictates otherwise for many of us for different reasons. You know?
Could you talk a bit about your writing process and maybe some writing practices that you would recommend most highly to aspiring people?
Yeah, I recommend complete isolation. Like, you know, like, just go somewhere. Turn off the television, turn off the internet, you know, and get some friends who want to do the same thing. I don't know. You know, so like my writing process is, I mostly write in the summer because I'm teaching and doing other things during the school year. And so I spend like 4 months in the summer doing actually just that, to kind of have like a ritual of writing, you know, just like make it like a forced habit, because For me, I don't always sit down when writing poems, for example, and say, I'm going to write a poem about X. It's the practice that produces the content sometimes. Sometimes it's the form that produces the content, right? So, you know, so to do it like regularly in a like really sustained way, to like set times when I'm like, okay, for these 4 hours with my four friends who are doing the same thing, because I actually like this you know, complete isolation with others is what I like. You know, as opposed to like, you know, just being alone and kind of like a lonely, you know, kind of, you know, writer in a cabin. I like a lonely writer in a cabin with other lonely writers in the cabin. But I do think that there's something that happens in a kind of sustained practice that does create that kind of thing I was talking about earlier, which is like when you open up that part of your brain. And I think this is true for any artistic practice. I can never remember names, but there's that choreographer who has that wonderful book about ritual and about practice and about entering the room, you know, entering like the, it's the same thing, you know, entering like, you know, you have to create this piece, you enter just a white room, right? Like, how do you get at, what are you going to do in that white room? Like, how do you know? And I think it's like this practice. And, you know, I also want to say that, you know, my practice varies depending on like what I need or what I want. And I like to listen to strange things. I like to have sound effect, a rhythm. And I think that the way that you do that is to like have sound playing, some kind of sustained kind of sound for a long period of time. You know, I think, you know, who would I refer, you know, like, yeah, I would put like, you know, oddly, you know, somebody like Amiri Baraka and Robert, and Robert Creeley in the same kind of realm of, you know, here is, I'm not saying I'm writing bebop, but there it is, you know, that there it is because that's what I'm listening to. That's what I'm kind of interested in and kind of a sonic level. I think all kinds of sounds can like affect an artwork.
One of the really unique and amazing things about Life in a Box is a pretty like this. Like you said earlier, you have to, it's best read from start to finish. And there's a certain order to the poem, or to the book where it kind of circles on itself. And I was wondering kind of about the way poems are ordered in the book, if that's something that you figured out after you wrote individual pieces, or did you have that in mind as you were writing it, and what your thought process about
that was? It was really something that came later. In fact, you know, the construction of the book at the last, you know, there was like, I written these, this work, and I was just like, okay, now where's the book? Like, I had no idea where the book was. You know, so it actually, it came later. And, you know, it's kind of like, in some ways I think you have to think about, or I have to think about the book as a kind of poem, and it's, you know, it's a kind of poem, you know. I think about the stanza as a kind of poem if I'm writing like more stanzaic, you know, lineated poems, kind of mini poem, you know, inside this like larger thing. And so I had to think about the relation once all of this stuff was written. I like that you mentioned the repetition because like it's always, I think, you know, in work that's not like, especially, well, I can't say that about all work, but like, you know, I think about my work in this way because it's not like immediately kind of, it's not like immediately accessible. It's kind of like, it has a kind of resonant or like a resonating accessibility, that repetition really becomes important to that kind of like understanding, you know, as you work through the book, as you read through it, to kind of like have these markers, sometimes even the same language. There's actually a moment here that I have, there's a line from my very first book, which I thought was cute, but nobody reads across to the first book. But, you know, so there's, it's actually "What is simple is nothing." That's the line that's from the first book. But yeah, I think that they become kind of like a different kind of anchor. There are other grounds on which to stand, I think, in the book, but those are different kinds of anchors, just that kind of like, that the repetition in both like idea and sometimes language, or sometimes like variations in language.
I was interested in what you were, the optimism and the sort of strategies we have in our writing around aspiration and living and that kind of stuff. And so I was wondering if, you know, if there's any situations in which there could be a reason to suspend that optimism insofar as, you know, a work that's more interested in trauma or the tragical melancholy or something like that, would there be, because, I mean, this is a very tenacious question for my own work, but
what do you mean by optimism? When you say optimism, what are you referring to?
Like resolution, maybe, or something like that, like having, a desire to resolve through something that's diametrically opposed to the tragic, whether it's just conceptual or, otherwise.
I think that that one has to, in a sense, become optimistic in the space of, like, irresolution or unresolution. You know, I don't think that, I think that resolution, in a sense, is either, accident or, the Hollywood movie or something. You know, like, where does resolution occur? I don't know. I think that I would love to know more about your project, and I think if I did, I could answer this question to your liking more, because I'll just talk, But I think that, what's optimistic in this book, like I was saying before, that there are these moments of, you can stand outside yourself, right? There's no way out, I think, Like, we live in a dystopic time. We live in the prediction that is, kind of like always, kind of dire. how do you do that? Like, how do you survive that, right? Like, where do you go? I think the creative in itself is one possibility to, like, make something that speaks in concert with all of these other ways of speaking. I mentioned earlier, I was talking about, the way that, for me, the way that I think about discourse, kind of like, this kind of like intertwining of, kind of like myriad, like innumerable utterances that inhabit the world and make the world, right? So on one hand, there's like Fox News and what they, like their constant, like blah, blah, blah. What's on the other side of that? How else can, like, we, that is optimistic for me in the sense that, like, these kinds of utterances or different utterances that are not necessarily already known utterances or, say, kind of like fictional and repressive utterances contribute to the making of the world, right? So that's, I think, one possibility or two possibilities for, like, way of kind of thinking about what's optimistic. Right, yeah, I think that, one has to recognize that, and this, in some ways, it may not just be our times, like all times, like medieval times were just like as brutal, like what wasn't brutal in, like medieval Europe, it was brutal, we always live in brutal times in a sense, I guess, but like, so what do you do inside that? And I think that, those are, two ways of thinking about optimism. I also think just about, like, within the realm of trauma, there's a way in which psychoanalysis in particular is all about remembering, You have to remember the trauma, you have to, like, work through it, you have to, like, also, like, disparage your mother. But one could also forget as a possibility. Is not forgetting a possibility for, like, recovery? Are there other ways of kind of, like, existing in, like, at least, at the very least, imagine spaces of freedom?
Let's thank Dawn again.
Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.